About a month ago, I asked Kelly to trade with me. I didn't know that if I was going to be here or not last week. So I want to thank him for trading with me. Made him talk a week early. But when I asked him a month ago what I was going to talk about was time. And I was going to talk about universal time. So the different rotations of the planets, the different moons that they had and how that affected we lived on different planets, what that would be for our time, and how we get 60 cycles and 50 cycles and 60 seconds and 30 seconds and stuff. But after I did the math for about 20 minutes, I gave up on that talk. So I just decided that would take me too long to prepare and wasn't worth it. So I switched after reading scriptures about time. And I decided that I'd talk about timing. And as I was looking at time, it brought back memories of when I was back in Afghanistan and thinking about timing is in everything. Because back when I arrived in Afghanistan, it was January of 2012. I was not sure why they wanted me. So I was asked over three times in several years past to volunteer to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and to participate in the war. And I always felt like I didn't want to volunteer to go. So I had several inspections and exercises and stuff. And in 2004, I had an inspection that with active duty coming in to inspect the Air National Guard. Well, after that inspection, they met with me one-on-one, and the war was going on in Afghanistan and Iraq and had started. And they let me know that I was going to be activated. They said, your inspection has went extremely well, so we've decided that you're going to be activated and we're going to take you over to the war. So they sent me a slot for that, and one of my other officers said, I'll take it. Good timing in my life, so I'll take it. So it wasn't me that went. So they did it again to me in 2 years. They sent me a position, and they said, we need you over here. And it was specific to my name, but the coding on it allowed the wing commander to ask if there was other officers who wanted to go. Well, luckily, there was another officer that said he would go. So there's 6 years down the road that I didn't have to go. But in 2010, in November 1st of 2010, they set a code to the state of Iowa that was specifically for me. And this code had two slots. It had two slots because it had to be a full-time officer that went. It had to be a certain person. It had to be a certain degree. It had to be all the stuff I had. But there was another officer there on me that had the same stuff I had. So they knew to get me activated, they would have to send two slots to the state of Iowa. So they did. In 2010, both of us were notified that we had a year to get our stuff together. So both of us had to go so that there was no choice. So I let Tammy know a year early that we were going to have to get ready and make all this stuff happen. So it comes down to timing is everything because God had a hand in when I went over there. I feel like he decided when I would go over to war. And so I arrived January 1st of 2012 in the middle of the winter. So the winter is probably worst it could ever be in January and February over there in Afghanistan. So this was a blessing that I thought was really a nasty thing to do to me. I'd rather go over there in the summer and enjoy the nice temperatures and everything. So when I got there on January 1st, I had to have a special briefing, and they briefed everybody on their missions. So I'm sitting there for a couple of hours while they're briefing everybody on their missions as they get there, and I'm last. So when they do my briefing, they brief me with a colonel who's a rank above me, and they have a general, a one-star general at the Pentagon on a secure line to discuss my mission with me. And They gave me an impossible mission. I thought it was impossible. So the mission was called Operation Devil Hammer. And they wouldn't let me not take this mission. And that's why I was going to Afghanistan. So I was lucky that it was in the winter. It took me 3 days to get up into the mountains. It took me 3 days to get to this army base. But the winter was thing that saved my life, because in the winter, the Afghanis have a hard time destroying things. They have a hard time taking out convoys and doing stuff like that. So it gave me the ability to make relationships with the Army, because I was on an Army base. I was an Air Force officer on an Army base working to help the Army on things that they couldn't do. So I was a threat to them, because to think that there was things that the Army couldn't do that they sent an Air Force officer to do was not a good deal. So the winter was a good thing for me, because I was able to fix things in the winter and also do the operation that I was sent to do. So I could do 50% of that operation, 50% of helping people in the Army fix things that they didn't know how to fix. I was sent with Air Force teams that were experts in power. They were experts in generators. They were experts in power. So we were able to do things for them as for special forces, to keep people doing things that they were able to do. And that let me build favors. So for those 3 months, I was able to build favors because I was there in the winter. So when Operation Devil Hammer was over and I was sent back to Bagram Air Force Base, and I was sent back there in the middle of March, so the weather was pretty good. And I got my new mission. So my new mission was to train the Afghani armies. So I was to train the Afghani armies in electricity and air cooling. So I had to give a class on their base once a month. So I thought, well, that's not bad, once a month. I didn't get to pick the base, though. If I got to pick the base, I'd pick safe base. I'd pick a base that, you know, wasn't doing things. Well, that's not what happened. They picked bases for me. So in March was my first base. In March, I had to go give a class, only a one-day class. Took me 1 day to get there. 1 day of class and 1 day to get back. So my first class was on a base called Thunder, and the base beside it, every base I went to, there was an American base and there was an Afghani base, and they were always side by side because we supported the Afghanis and we took care of everything with them. So after that, class that I gave, and then we got on our helicopters and we left, because again, I was able to get favors, so I had helicopters take us there rather than convoys take us there and get us ready. So 2 days later, that base, Lightning, was bombed, and the place that I stayed was completely gone. So then my next class in April, so I had another class in April, and this next class was on a base called Mustang. I don't remember the American base. I just remember the Afghan base. Afghan base was called Mustang. Again, we arrived in helicopters, 1 day there, 1 day class, 1 day home. And after that, 2 days later, exactly 2 days, you know, so I get home on a Tuesday and Thursday it's bombed. So that base also had some severe damage on it. And in these bombings, there was people hurt. I don't know that anybody got killed. We didn't lose any forces, but people. So then I get another base in May. So I need to get another assignment in May. And when my class was over, the commander, he comes in and he says, I don't know whether to keep you and make you stay here or let you leave, because 2 days later, we're going to have an issue. So they let me leave, but he put the base down in lockdown, and they had some other special things come in. So luckily, nothing happened to that base. So it was good because I didn't like being called the trigger for an attack. And that's kind of the nickname I got for a little bit, was I was the actual trigger for something to happen. So when I would get there, something would happen a little while. But all these examples are that timing is everything. No matter what you do, timing, God helps you with timing. So that's my topic this morning. That intro was supposed to take 2 minutes, but you know, it took a little longer. So one of my favorite books in the Bible is the book of John, and Mark talks a lot about the book of John. It's a very fun book to read. It's got very specific things that, you know, Mark talks about that you can't find anywhere else. And it's got good timing examples in it. One of my favorite parts of the Bible is found in John. Over and over, we find Jesus repeating a simple phrase, and then suddenly it seems like he changes his mind for some reason, and it speaks to God's timing, which is perfect, not too early, not too late, but precisely at the right time. It's not just John that points to this. John 1, 1 through 3 says, "In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. All things were created through him, and apart from him, not one thing was created that has been created." Of course, this points us back to Genesis 1:1, which starts out, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And this is a timing thing. When we think about God's time, and it's really hard for us to comprehend God's time. That's why I wanted to do the planets, and I wanted to do how every system has different time, and God's time is completely different than our time. So we see in the beginning, what is in the beginning to God? Remember that eternity stretches forever. It goes in both directions like a string that has no beginning and no end, which I feel like that's what God has, no beginning, no end. But at some point on this string, God said, "Now is the right time to create." And they did it. I said they because we understand that God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit were all present and involved in creation. Again, timing is everything. So that started our time, not God's time, our time. Another example of God's perfect timing is found in Esther. And to get these verses that I'm going to talk about, these different timing, was I found them during my universal time investigation of just perfect timing things. And Esther has something that involved timing, that God made her queen for a reason. And we find that Haman had set up the Jews to be killed back in the Old Testament. This is found in Esther chapter 3. And Mordecai and Esther, who are both Jews, are communicating back and forth on how to resolve this. And we find this in Esther 4:13 and 14. Mordecai told the messengers to reply to Esther, "Don't think that you will escape the fate of all the Jews because you are in the king's palace. If you keep silent this time, liberation and deliverance will come to the Jewish people from another place, but you and your father's house will be destroyed. Who knows, perhaps you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." And if you read that story, if you read through that story, and that could be a whole talk in itself, you'll find that Esther was there for a purpose. She was queen for a purpose, and that was, again, timing of God. Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8 says, "There's an occasion for everything, and a time for every activity under heaven, a time to give birth, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to throw stones, a time to give to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to avoid embracing, a time to search, a time to count up as lost, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, tear, and a time to sow, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace." We understand that these examples, that timing is important. So God puts this in the Bible to talk about timing. And he wants us to understand that timing is important. So what is that phrase that I was talking about earlier in John? This is found in John 2:4. And the phrase is to do with Jesus. All of John is about Jesus and what happens in the gospel. So 2:4 says, what has this concern of yours to do with me, woman? Jesus asked, my hour has not yet come. So there's that phrase, and there it is, my hour has not yet come. Jesus is saying that the time isn't right for him to be revealed as God's Son in the flesh, confirmed by miracles. I also find it interesting that even though Jesus says this, he still is obedient to his earthly mother. We could spend a lot of time going through the history of the time of when Jesus starts his gospel messages for 3 years. We have the Roman Empire, and we have the kingdom, and we have roads that are being built, and people are able to travel. Again, I've heard talks on just talking about the history of that time. So the next time we find that Jesus says this again is in chapter 7. So John 7:1 says, after this, Jesus traveled in Galilee, since he did not want to travel in Judea because the Jews were trying to kill him. Since the verse starts out saying after this, let's go back to verse 66 in chapter 6. From that moment, many of his disciples turned back and no longer accompanied him. Therefore, Jesus said to the 12, you don't want to go away too, do you? And of course, Peter gives a brilliant answer in verse 68 and 69. Simon Peter answered, Lord, who will we go to? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. Going back to chapter 7, we pick up in verse 2. The Jewish festival of Tabernacles was near, so his brothers said to him, leave here and go to Judea so your disciples can see the works that you are doing. For no one does anything in secret while he's seeking public recognition. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. For not even his brothers believed in him. Look at how Jesus answers them in verse 6. Jesus told them, my time has not yet arrived, but your time is always at hand. This hurt his brothers because it hits home so hard. Your time is always at hand. Jesus is basically saying you should be busy about your Father's kingdom instead of worrying about what I'm doing. And that is a huge lesson for us, is we may not understand or appreciate God's timing for many of the events that happen to us. But the one thing that he wants us to do every day of our lives is talk about him and spread the gospel. That's what we're here to do. Verse 8, Jesus doubles down on what he says to his brothers and says, go up to the festival yourselves. I'm not going up to the festival yet because my time is not yet fully come. Well, here his brothers wanted to be around him because there was everybody else that thought that was neat. But so Jesus says, okay, now I'm not going with you. You go on your own. So they didn't like that very well. But if you're keeping track, this is the third time Jesus says it's not my time. But notice he changed it a bit. He says, my time is not fully come. So he means it's getting closer. And we skip down to verse 25, and in 25 it says, some of the people of Jerusalem were saying, isn't this the man that they want to kill? Yet look, he's speaking publicly, and they're saying nothing to him. Can it be true that the authorities know he is the Messiah? But we know this man, where this man is from. When the Messiah comes, nobody will know where he is from. As he was teaching in the temple complex, Jesus cried out, you know me and you know where I am from, yet I have not come on my own, but one who sent me is true. You don't know him. I know him because I am from him and he sent me. Then they tried to seize him, yet no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. Jesus doesn't say the phrase this time. It's the author John letting us know that Jesus' time hasn't arrived yet. And we see the same thing in the next chapter. John 8:20. He spoke these words by the treasury while teaching in the temple complex, but no one seized him because his hour had not come. The statement comes at the end of Jesus proclaiming himself the light of the world and claiming Jehovah is his Father. When he does this, he makes the Pharisees very angry. Then we turn to Chapter 12, Jesus replied to them, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Can you imagine that you'd been with Jesus for 3 years. You were the apostles, you were the 12, and you'd been with him for 3 years, and you'd heard him say over and over, it's not time. So everything's not in the Bible. So I'm assuming he was, you know, saying not time, not time, not time. And then all of a sudden, in John 12:23, Jesus says, the hour's come, it's time. So I'm sure that the apostles were astonished. And I'm sure they talked to each other. Did we hear right? I mean, did we hear him say what we've been waiting for forever? So Jesus helps them a little bit when we go on in verse 27 and 28. And he says, when he's talking to God, he says, now my soul is troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But that is why I come to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Jesus point that his entire ministry has been leading up to this moment. Look at verse 1 of chapter 13. Before the Passover festival, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in this world, he loved them to the end. We can go back to Matthew and find this in 26:18, where he says, go into the city to a certain man, he said, and tell him, the teacher says, my time is near. I am celebrating the Passover at your place with my disciples. So he changed. He changed completely. And now he's talking to the apostles and letting them know that there's one last feast that he's going to do with them. And go prepare this place where they're going to meet and they're going to have it. So again, timing is everything. In chapter 17 of John, Jesus starts off his prayer this way. And this is in 17:1. Jesus spoke these things, looked up to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son that the Son may glorify you. Jesus knew from the beginning, all the way back in Genesis, that he would end up on the cross. He knew how it would turn out, but Jesus also understood the importance of timing. He knew that it wasn't enough to anger the Pharisees and the Sadducees to the point of wanting him dead. He knew it wasn't enough to have his apostles and disciples around for a few months. He knew timing is everything. Remember, the Passover was on Wednesday, again, timing, so timing was everything. David recognized this truth as well in Psalms 31:15. The course of my life is in your power. Deliver me from the power of mine enemies and from my persecutors. God's timing is perfect. We have the illusion that we are in control, but Jesus addresses that in his Sermon on the Mount. He said in Matthew 6:27, can any one of you add a single cubit to his height by worrying? Jesus helps his disciples understand this in the first chapter of Acts 1:7. He said to them, it is not for you to know times or periods that the Father has set by his own authority. And as Isaiah tells us in Isaiah 55:8-9, God says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts and your ways are not my ways. This is the Lord's declaration. For as heaven is higher than earth, so my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. Timing is everything, and God's timing is precisely perfect. While this can be disappointing to us, it should also give us comfort. When we ask God for something and he doesn't seem to answer us, it may not mean he is saying no. He may be saying not yet. There was many times it has been years later before I realized that God did answer my prayers in his perfect time. So that's my lesson this morning. Recognize that God's timing is perfect. I would like to be part, if you'd like to be part of the kingdom of, or have any needs that you would like to make before the church, please come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.